Mash Gawain. Autumn is here, and already we can see the leaves on a few trees changing, but admiring them while you're zipping along the freeway isn't the best way to fully experience fall. How about a hike? We have a couple of people to help us pick good hikes and good places to go to see the changing leaves. Joining us is Susan Charks, author of Best Day Hikes Near Philadelphia and Outdoors with Kids Philadelphia. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you.
And John Brunner is the Mid-Atlantic Recreation Planner for the Appalachian Mountain Club. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having us.
So the folks at the Pennsylvania Bureau of Forestry say the peak color, at least in the southwest sort of quarter of Pennsylvania, will be about October 20th through 31st. Does that sound about right to both of you?
We don't focus on the southwest, only the southeast, but
I did mean southeast, because that's exactly where we are, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah, I would say any time over the next, probably from the 14th, 15th, all the way through that next week, it would be the peak. But the color is already starting out in Upper Bucks and the Lehigh Valley.
And when you start to see sort of that first leaf changing somewhere around, you just start noticing it. Where's the first place you want to head? Susan?
Well, Jeff, I think that some of the most beautiful places to see fall foliage are where the leaves are reflected in the water, so around a lake or on a river. And one of the places that I love to go is French Creek State Park, and that that has a great combination of beautiful. It's a beautiful small lake. You can hike around the lake and
where
enjoy
is that?
Colors. That's in Chester County near Elverson, and it's also part of a complex. Huge complex of the Hopewell Big Woods, and so there's lots of other places to hike where you can enjoy foliage and hike up along ridge tops and look down on the trees.
So let's see, I'm looking at your list here. That was French Creek?
French Creek State Park.
Okay, and to other places where you might be able to go where you can kind of get both the lake and the trees changing.
Well, if you go about an hour north in Bucks County, I would highly recommend for color would be Nockamixon State Park, which is in parts of a couple townships in northern Bucks County, Upper Bucks we call it. And there's a really large lake there. You can still probably rent kayaks there. They have lakeside trails, wooded trails. There's a variety of trails. They actually have a paved bicycle trail there as well. So there's a variety of walking surfaces and for different skill sets of hikers. And fabulous colors up in the Upper Bucks, just like French Creek.
And how do you find out where sort of the colors are strongest? There are some pretty good websites out there, aren't there, where you can go and look? Is it the Pennsylvania Bureau of Forestry has a good website?
That's true. The Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, which is really our state parks, if you just Google PA fall colors or PA story maps, you will get a whole website of story maps. One, the most recent one they did is on fall colors across Pennsylvania. And probably the other state park that I would mention that's within driving distance of this immediate area in the Philly, if you want to go up 476, the turnpike is Lehigh Gorge State Park and Jim Thorpe. Some people may not want to, would like to hike in an urban setting. You're in Jim Thorpe, which is known as the Little Switzerland of Pennsylvania, and you get amazing views of the mountains from downtown, or you can go up this fabulous gorge along the Lehigh River on a bike trail, basically.
And I tried it out before we got on the air here, and if you go to Google or a search engine and just put in PA Story Map, that website from the DCNR is going to come right up, and it's fairly easy to use. They're getting like photos in and reports.
Correct.
Of like where the leaves are.
It's map
are
based,
changing.
And they provide driving directions too.
So you can then just click on something and get directions from wherever.
Correct.
You are.
Yep.
Excellent. So good time to perhaps take a drive this weekend. Susan, I want to get back to some of your suggestions because you submitted a whole list of very nice suggestions for places to go for hikes and kind of different ideas for hikes. So we've already talked about if you want to go and sort of like see the nice leaves reflecting in a lake. Say one of the things I like to do, I'm from Oregon, and so we have a lot of mountains and valleys in Oregon. I always loved going to a high place and then sort of looking down into a valley, and then you can see all those beautiful colors in a valley. Is any places around here where you think would be good for that?
Sure. Well, one of the places that we have right nearby is Fort Washington State Park. that's not a mountaintop, but that's a hilltop. And one of the cool things about going hiking in the fall, in addition to fall foliage, of course, is to look for hawks. And the hawk migration coincides with the foliage changing. And Fort Washington is a hawk watch site. The Militia Hill Hawk Deck overlooks the hillside, so you can not only look up to see the hawks, you can look down and see the trees changing colors. And there are other places like that. The summits along the Appalachian Trail, the Kittatinny Ridge, are great places, again, to look for hawks and enjoy the foliage. That would be Bake Oven Knob is a popular destination.
And where is that?
That's west of Allentown along the Appalachian Trail. And Hawk Mountain, which is also nearby. And that's a Hawk Mountain Wild. Hawk Mountain is a sanctuary, so there's a small fee charge, but that fee goes to help the conservation activities of that organization.
And to get this experience of being on a summit and looking down into a valley, one of the places you mentioned was Trexler Preserve near Allentown. Tell me about that place.
Well, Trexler Preserve is basically, it's a huge area. It surrounds the Lehigh Valley Zoo. So if you want to bring your kids to the zoo and then go for a walk in the preserve, there's all kinds of different elevation changes and hillsides, and you can look down and out along large expanses of woods and meadows. And another curious thing about the Trexler Preserve is that it includes some herds of bison and elk that date from the days that it was a game preserve.
Hmm. Kind of jumping back to this idea of that, you know, you want to check and see when the leaves start changing, and it's different in different times of year. Do either of you know why leaves change sooner or later?
We
in different
both
years?
Know why.
Okay,
but Susan's going to talk about it.
Okay, explain it to me.
Well, leaves change color basically because the chlorophyll that's in the leaves, which the trees and plants use to photosynthesize, to use light to convert carbon dioxide into nutrients. So that chlorophyll is in the leaves during the spring and the summer, and it's produced the more light there is, the more chlorophyll there is. So they stay green. But at the same time, they also have other pigments, and they have carotene, which is the yellow-orange pigment, and they have red and purple pigments, the anthocyanins. And all those pigments are in the leaves at the same time. As the chlorophyll production slows down, the green color disappears, and those other colors basically are masked by the green. So we see our leaves changing color, returning to their original colors, because some of the colors, the yellow and the red and the purple, are the leaves colors when they first come out in the spring many times.
And so as the trees start noticing when the sun is coming up later than even we do, even though we notice that. I want to bring our listeners into the conversation too. Call us with your suggestions of the best places to go look at the fall leaves. The telephone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also email your suggestions to radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. And also, if you've been out there taking photos, send us your photos. We'll put them on Twitter. We'll also, you can send them to us via Twitter at WHYY Radio Times. You can also send them on Facebook. That address also is WHYY Radio Times. Just put it after the Facebook.com. So we're looking forward to hearing your suggestions for the best place to go to see the changing leaves. And now, John, I want to turn to you. Say I want to go over to, say I'm in New Jersey, and I'm looking for a good place to see the fall colors. Where do you suggest I go?
Well, you can hop right across the river and head down to the Pine Barrens. That's a vast tract of wilderness, really. in South Jersey. And, you know, the Pine Barrens, you know, it's not a place you're going to go to find mountains, that's for sure. However, you do have beautiful fall colors. It's not all about the reds and yellows. You have the green of the pines. But you have many trees and shrub species like dogwoods and sweet gum that are extremely colorful, and it's just beautiful. And for me, part of the fall color experience is also, which doesn't please everyone perhaps, but it's the bouquet of the fall, the smell of the leaves, and the fall is part of the charm. So you're walking down in the Pine Barrens in the forest in sandy soil. It's quiet. All you hear is the wind in the trees and birds, and it's pretty magical. Some of the places you could go would be Batstow Village, the Mullica River. Wharton State Forest is the largest tract of land down there, so it's pretty accessible to this region. And so many of us go canoeing there, especially in the fall.
And I want to talk a little bit more about paddling and canoeing and kayaking. I also want to maybe get some suggestions from Delaware. Are either of you familiar with Delaware at all? Because if not, we should ask our Delaware listeners to call with your suggestions. The phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You're familiar with some places in Delaware, Susan?
Well, Brandywine Creek State Park, which is, I guess, just north of Wilmington. It's along the Brandywine Creek, and that combines a lot of the elements we've been talking about, particularly the trees reflected in the creek, and there's a very nice wide path along the creek, so it's great for not only hiking but also biking and bringing your kids. And then if you go, you can go from the riverside trail also into the woods and enjoy some views down from summits there. Mm. So, yeah,
nice. And John, your group, the Appalachian Mountain Club, do you have events kind of centered on seeing fall colors, that sort of thing?
Well, we do. You know, the organization was founded in 1876, and we've been producing hiking guides and doing trail building since then. And really, our organization is driven by the volunteer members who belong to the chapters. And we have a Delaware Valley chapter that's extremely active. There's virtually a outdoor activity every day of the year led by leaders who are trained and lead safe trips on all the different types of outdoor activities, biking, hiking, skiing, you name it, pretty much across the Delaware Valley region and beyond. And we do have a location, an outdoor center up in the Delaware Water Gap called Mohican Outdoor Center, which would offer some fabulous fall color viewing, by the way, both on Raccoon Ridge, on the Appalachian Trail. You actually drive over the Appalachian Trail to get to the Mohican Outdoor Center.
We're talking about the best places to see autumn foliage. My guest, you just heard from John Brunner there. He is with the Appalachian Mountain Club. We also have in the studio Susan Charks. She is an author and has a couple of books about where to find hikes in the Philadelphia area. If you have a question or comment, the phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can email radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. We'd like to see your pictures, too. We'll be back after a break.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art supports WHYY and presents Jitish Kalat, one of India's most influential contemporary artists and curator of India's upcoming International Biennale. Jitish Kalat will discuss his cutting-edge work and South Asia's growing impact on the global art scene. Jitish Kalat at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Sunday, October 19th at 2 p.m. The event is open to the public with limited seating. For reservations, 215-235-7469 or at philamuseum.org.
Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Sunday, October 19th at 2 p.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, videos, and all open house dates can be found online at mfriends.org. That's mfriends.org.
Fox Chase Cancer Center is a proud supporter of WHYY. One of the newest advances in the fight against cancer is immunotherapy, a treatment that unleashes your body's own immune system so it can better fight cancer cells. Early results from studies at Fox Chase Cancer Center and other cancer centers show promise, even in patients who did not respond to other treatments. Learn more at 888-FOX-CHASE or foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, part of Temple Health, your first choice in cancer care.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady. We're talking about fall foliage and the best places to see the turning leaves. You can join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. We want to hear your suggestions. And we received a call from someone who couldn't stay on the line, Therese from Ardmore. She asked, well, maybe you're not quite up for a big, long hike. If you want to drive somewhere and see the leaves, where are some good places to drive to? And Susan, you have a suggestion?
Yeah, Hawk Mountain, which I mentioned just briefly a couple minutes ago, is beautiful, has a beautiful overlook that looks out over the mountains. You can see the foliage. And the trail to get to that overlook is actually accessible. So it is for people who are mobility impaired, need wheelchairs or other devices. It's actually it's completely accessible. It's also great for strollers and for anybody wants to take a short walk. So, and then, of course, the drive up to the mountain is also beautiful.
And, John, you have a suggestion?
Yes. For coming from the main line and Ardmore and Narberth and areas like that, I think the easiest thing to do for truly a driving tour to take in the fall colors is to travel on the northeast extension of the Pennsylvania Turnpike 476, because you're basically, once you get past Lansdale, you're going through all the different smaller ridges, working your way up to the Appalachian Mountains, right up to towards Jim Thorpe and Hickory Run State Park in that area. So it's a pretty easy way to take in the colors.
All right, let's go to the telephone, and we have John from New Jersey. John, you're on Radio Times.
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I just spent 3 weeks sitting in Tonkanic, Pennsylvania, at my lake house, watching the fall foliage change. That's what I do every year. I just sit on the back porch on the lake. One of the absolute best things you could ever do in that area is get a kayak, put in at Mehoopany near the Procter & Gamble plant, and drift the 15 miles downstream to the Tonkanic public boat ramp. It takes all day, and you've never seen color on the sides of the river like you'll see. There's 300-400-foot cliffs covered with hardwoods of every color. Bald eagles soaring over you, beaver swimming around your kayak. It's probably the most spectacular fall foliage trip you could do. It is a three-hour drive to get up there, but there's cheap motels and cheap restaurants. And for kayakers who want a simple downriver drift for 15 miles, that's blow their mind.
That sounds really beautiful, John. Thank you for the suggestion. Glad to hear about it from you. And I know that the idea of being in a kayak or being in a canoe and looking at leaves, that sounds appealing. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun. John, you have suggestions for other places?
Well, first of all, that caller, that sounds heavenly. I presume he was on the north branch of the Susquehanna River, but if people want to paddle, if they don't have their own boats, you still have time to pick up one of the outfitters on the Delaware River, for example. To me, that's the ultimate around here. That would be the equivalent of going up to the Susquehanna, but much closer. In Bucks County, there's Bucks River Country. They're open till the end of the month. Kittatinny Canoes up in the Water Gap area. So if you're out in the middle of the river, especially up above the Water Gap in the National Recreation Area, you're really getting views of the Kittatinny Ridge on one side, and the hills of the on the Pennsylvania side, and it is gorgeous from the center of the river. I think both of those outfitters are open till the end of October, basically. And for people that are do-it-yourselfers, you can take your own boat up there to the Water Gap and put in and have a fabulous trip.
Sounds like a lot of fun. We have an email from Shirley, and she says, for a quick local glimpse at some gorgeous trees, try South Ardmore Park in Ardmore. Either of you been there?
No, but I'm a big fan of local parks.
Yeah, that'd be great. Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Pam from Bucks County. Pam, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you. The best place in Bucks County is Bowman's Tower.
Yeah.
Right on Washington's Crossing. Just fabulous, and I think it's a nominal $6 charge. That goes to the preservation of the tower. It's a great historical site, And if you have kids and you want to tire them out, it's 165 stickers. And I hadn't been there since 1966. Went back last week, and just like 66, the elevator was out. So it felt just like 1966 all over again.
Oh, excellent.
165 stairs, and it was just beautiful. And I would like to go back again this weekend because the leaves weren't quite changing when we were there.
Bowman's Tower is awesome. And you get sweeping views looking upriver, especially on the Delaware River towards New Hope. It's just below New Hope, Pennsylvania. You know, and you're right across the river road from the D&L Trail, the Delaware Canal towpath, which is another amazing location along the river up there that you can travel for quite a distance between, well, really Yardley, if you wanted to, all the way up to Easton, Pennsylvania.
Hmm. We got a comment from Paul who said the pagoda in Redding is gorgeous.
Yes. You didn't think of that. That's a great idea.
All right, let's go back to the telephone, and we have Donna from Voorhees, New Jersey. Donna, welcome to Radio Times.
Yes, hi. I'm just calling because my husband and I have gone to a place called Falling Water, which is a Frank Lloyd Wright home in Pennsylvania. It's in Mill Run, Pennsylvania. It looks like 14, let me see, I think I got the directions up somewhere here, but it's a great trip.
I think if you look up Falling Water on Google, you're going to get it. Yeah, if you look up Falling Water in Pittsburgh on Google, you're going to be able to find that. That
right.
Sounds gorgeous,
that's
too.
That's, I believe, near the Occoquan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And fall, my gosh, it's just perfect.
Yeah, well, I can see the picture of even when it's green, you can just imagine how amazing it would be with all of those colors. So we just have a couple of minutes here. Let's kind of wrap up with a couple of suggestions of other places we haven't talked about yet. And Susan, one of the things that you mentioned when we talked before the program is it's not all just about the leaves. There are places to go see other kinds of colors this time of year too. Tell me about that a little
bit. Right. Well, the same sort of chemical processes are at work in berries and vines and wildflowers. So all those colors are changing, and some of the best places to see that are meadows. And we have extensive meadows in places like Pennypack Ecological Trust, which is in Huntington Valley, the Crow's Nest Preserve, which is actually out near Elberson, near the French Creek State Park, and in New Jersey, the Pole Farm, which is in Mercer County, has recently been renovated, so the trails have been added to, and so all those places right now have gorgeous colors, wildflowers like the goldenrods and the berries changing on the grapevines and dogwood berries.
It's a great time of year. Any last spot you want to leave us with, John?
Well, for those of us in this region, Natural Lands Trust, which is a great organization that we partner with frequently, has a number of preserves in the area. And if you just look up Natural Lands Trust, Susan mentioned Crow's Nest, which is right next to French Creek State Park, the Marathon Preserve on the Delaware River right above Bucks County, the Glades Wildlife Refuge, which is beautiful. It's down on the Delaware Bay Shore. And one last thing, I am a big fan of traveling. This isn't a big fall color thing, but the beach in Delaware, particularly Cape Henlopen, is really beautiful. The dunes have the goldenrod going on. The sea oats have turned golden brown, and it's a lot of wildflowers. It's really a spectacular time to do that.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. John Brunner is the Mid-Atlantic Recreation Planner for the Appalachian Mountain Club, and thanks for stopping by. I really appreciate you coming to Radio Times. Susan Charks is author of Best Day Hikes Near Philadelphia and Outdoor with Kids Philadelphia. Thank you much for being here today.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, after a little short autumnal music break, we'll be back, and we're going to talk about apples.
Thank you.
Maybe I can put on my best jazz announcer voice. That was I'm not sure that I have that, but Falling Leaves with Chet Baker. And now we're going to turn to the apple. We like them cold and crisp, but more and more Americans are looking for something other than the old standby red delicious apple. We have a guest who can help us out with that. Rowan Jacobson is author of Apples of Uncommon Character. Welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be here.
Yeah. You say you have this book is just beautiful, and you say that we're in the middle of kind of an apple renaissance now. Why do you say that?
Well, we got through what would be the dark ages, I guess, that era that a lot of us grew up in, where all you really found in grocery stores was mostly Red Delicious, maybe Golden Delicious or Granny Smith, and that was about it. But apples are incredibly diverse, and thankfully, we're now seeing a lot of the old ones and a lot of amazing new ones in the market.
And this is not the first Renaissance. There was another?
There was this amazing era, the 1700s and the 1800s in America, where apple diversity just exploded. And it was all because the colonists and the settlers planted millions of apple seeds as they settled homesteads. And every apple seed that's planted will produce a new variety of apple that has never existed before. So out of all those plantings, with people like Johnny Appleseed, we got all these amazing new apples. And for a while there, every homestead would have maybe a dozen varieties on hand.
You mentioned Johnny Appleseed. Remind me who that was. And the question that I have is, you know how far west he got?
it was west of them. We wouldn't consider it west today, but Johnny Appleseed was a guy who had this money-making scheme where he would stop at cider mills in Pennsylvania and West Virginia, places like that, and get lots of free seeds, and then head west, usually on a barge or in a boat along the rivers, and would get ahead of the settlers and plant apple seeds, by the thousands or tens of thousands in these little nurseries that he would set up everywhere. And then as the settlers arrived, they needed apple trees to improve their land. That was often a requirement for the homesteading acts. And he had the trees to sell them. So he was doing it all to make money, but in the process, he ended up creating a lot of apple trees.
And Thomas Jefferson, he also sort of figures in apple history here, too, as well as political history, right?
Yeah, Jefferson, he was a big fan of apples. He raised about 18 different varieties at Monticello, but there are a handful that he really focused on. And he thought, he promoted apples as just a great crop for American farmers, both as a cash crop to sell for fresh eating, but also to make cider with.
And you say that New England is sort of the center of this renaissance now. I grew up on the West Coast, and so I'm not sure my Washington apple grower friends, how they would take that. But how is New England the center of this renaissance? What's going on?
New England is one of a few centers. It's interesting. Yeah, Washington State definitely dominates when you look at apple production. But out there, it's all kind of the big six varieties that are grown out there.
What are the big six varieties?
Well, Red Delicious is still number one, as it has been for decades, but it's been declining for a while. We've kind of lost our taste for that a while ago. And actually, this is the year that it might get passed by Gala, which is number two. And then Golden Delicious is three. And, you know, it goes downhill after that.
Yeah. Okay, but back to New England then. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
Sure. So the places where we didn't lose the old varieties are the places that basically didn't get bulldozed, some of where the old farms survived. So New England and then the Piedmont and Mid-Atlantic and Virginia and up into Appalachia a little bit and a little bit in certain places in the Midwest, where they held on to their rural areas. That's where we still find the old trees that are sparking a lot of this reinterest in heirloom varieties.
And the Red Delicious, then, it's still number one, but why are you not a fan of the Red Delicious?
I just got a write-up in the Professional Fruit Growers magazine in Washington State that was not pleased with me for dissing Red Delicious. But it's really, it's an apple that it was grown because it sold really well, and it sold really well because it looked so good. You know, it's got that iconic look and that deep, deep red skin that appeals to people in grocery stores. Then they buy it, they get it home, and they discover that it actually doesn't taste that good. It's not a particularly juicy apple, and it doesn't have any tartness. And especially in the East Coast, we tend to like a mix of tartness with the sweetness in our apples.
So it's more about how it looks in the grocery store than how it tastes once you get it home.
Right, and it also, but that super thick skin means that it lasts a really long time in warehouses and in grocery stores. But of course, that means that it's almost, the skin is almost impenetrable for us.
You said the Gala is number two, and I seem to remember, gosh, quite a long time ago when the Galas came from New Zealand, and they were just really, really, really tasty. And it seems like over time they've become less tasty. Is there anything in that?
That's an excellent point, actually. Yeah, Gala was developed in the 1920s in New Zealand and was revolutionary. You know, it's a really sweet apple with kind of a perfumed tropical kind of a flavor. Like, that was unlike any apple we had seen at the time. And it can still be a fantastic apple if, you know, straight off a tree or within a few weeks after it comes off the tree. It doesn't seem to last as well in storage as some of the others. And it's not always being grown in places that are perfect for it. So, yeah, I agree with you. We're seeing a bunch of Galas out there that aren't doing, you know, the name a whole lot of service.
Huh. And so is that because we tried to grow them closer to where they were going to be sold, and then it wasn't just, they weren't only available in those few weeks during the year that they were super good tasting?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, now they're kind of being grown the way many of the other big varieties are being grown. But you'll still find, if you get them, get the right ones at the right time, they really are pretty amazing still.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing we want to hear from our listeners is, where do you go to get that perfect tasting apple? Is there a particular stand you like to go to, or a particular store, or is there a farm that you go to? Do you pick your own? Tell us about where you go to find different kinds of apples, and especially if you know of unusual varieties. Clue us all in, and hopefully we won't destroy a special thing. But give us a call. The telephone number is 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about apples, and my guest is Rowan Jacobson. He's the author of Apples of Uncommon Character. You can also email us, radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We want to hear, what is your favorite kind of apple? And what is the most unusual kind of apple that you found that maybe the rest of us haven't quite heard about yet? Tell us where we can get it. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be back after a break.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art supports WHYY and presents Jitish Kalat, one of India's most influential contemporary artists and curator of India's upcoming International Biennale. Jitish Kalat will discuss his cutting-edge work and South Asia's growing impact on the global art scene. Jitish Kalat at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Sunday, October 19th at 2 p.m. The event is open to the public with limited seating. For reservations, 215-235-7469 or at philamuseum.org.
Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Sunday, October 19th at 2 p.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, videos, and all open house dates can be found online at mfriends.org. That's mfriends.org.
Fox Chase Cancer Center is a proud supporter of WHYY. One of the newest advances in the fight against cancer is immunotherapy, a treatment that unleashes your body's own immune system so it can better fight cancer cells. Early results from studies at Fox Chase Cancer Center and other cancer centers show promise, even in patients who did not respond to other treatments. Learn more at 888-FOX-CHASE or foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center, part of Temple Health. Your first choice in cancer care.
This is Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady, and for Marty Moskowain, we're talking about apples with author Rowan Jacobson, and you have lit up the telephone lines here. People want to talk about apples, so let's go straight to the telephone. We have Mary from Berwyn, Pennsylvania. Mary, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, well, I grew up next to my grandfather's apple orchard in Ohio, and he had apples for every season, beginning with the sort of a juicy green apple called a star apple. But my favorite one was one that came in the fall. It was kind of a beautiful russet color. It was called russet. And it had a wonderful, tangy, rich taste, and it made the most marvelous jelly.
So you're making my mouth water, Mary.
But I have never been able to find it.
So, Rowan, have you heard of the russet apple?
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that, Mary. Russets are, there's a whole sort of category of apples called russets. They often have, you know, a bunch of different first names like golden russet or Roxbury russet. But the russet refers to the skin. It's going to have, it doesn't look at all like an apple or what we think of as an apple. It's going to have kind of that brown, sandpapery skin, almost like an Asian pear or something. And anytime you see a russet apple, people tend to stay away from it if they see it in farmers markets or in stores because it looks weird to them. But every russet I've ever tasted has that wonderful, tangy, nutty flavor, very different than other apples, and is great in crisps and pies because of it.
We received a tweet from Gene who says, my new favorite apple is the Gold Rush. And first tried it at a business in Bucks County. He said, way tart and delicious.
Yeah, you know, I was going to mention Gold Rush. Gold Rush is a big apple in sort of from in Virginia on up through the Mid-Atlantic. And it's not an old apple. It was developed in the 70s and released in the 90s, but it is an amazing apple. Super firm, super tart early in the fall, then getting quite sweet toward the end of fall. But another great, great cooking apple. It kind of looks like an ugly Golden Delicious. It's actually a seedling from a Golden Delicious, but don't let the looks put you off. It's a really great apple.
I can't believe we're doing this show without any apples in the studio. I'm hungry for an apple now. Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Pam from Chester County. Pam, you're on Radio Times.
Hi. I grew up with an abundance of Golden Delicious apples in our backyard, which were never sprayed or treated, so you had to be careful where you bit. But they were just so good and so tasty. And now, as an adult, I am a big fan of Honeycrisp. And the best place that I found to get them is Weaver's Orchard, which is still in Chester County. It's north of Morgantown. And it's a wonderful orchard. I tried a new apple there this fall called, it was either Sansa or Sensa. Are you familiar with that one?
I am. I tried a Sansa recently. It's a sweet apple without, not very tart, right?
Right. Very juicy, very sweet, and it was good, but Honeycrisp at my family, we just can't. I buy a huge bag every other week, and we kind of fight over who's taken how many to work with us.
Yeah, Honeycrisp elicits, joy in people like no other apple I've ever seen. People go crazy for it. And they go, and it's the first apple I've seen where people go out looking. They don't go looking for apples. They're looking for Honeycrisp. So if they don't find them, they won't get anything because they have a texture unlike any other apple. They really just kind of explode in your mouth when you bite into them.
We received a tweet from... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say my husband and I like to take them when we go hiking, but we found that they're really messy because they're so juicy. It's almost like the juice that comes out of when you're eating a ripe peach. I mean, that's how juicy the apple is. It's running down your fingers. It's that good.
Yeah, exactly. They have bigger cells than other apples, and the cells are just, like, ready to burst. So when when that's why when you bite into them, you just get this like kind of explosion. But yeah, I agree. Probably not the best hiking apple.
Wow, that sounds really good. We received a tweet from Robin who said she bought some Honeycrisp from a farm in Lancaster last year, and she said they changed her life. They were the most amazing apples ever. Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Sean from Marion Station, Pennsylvania. Sean, you're on Radio Times.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just respond to what you said about apple picking orchards in the area. And I found this amazing orchard up in Media, Pennsylvania, called the Indian Orchards. And it's this organic farm run by a family for the last 100 years. And it's just a really sweet orchard to go out there and do a U-pick. But also last year, I was, sorry, I'm nervous. I made an infographic for Popular Science about apples.
Oh, and wow.
In my research, I found that there are 7,300 different varieties of apples, and I lowered it down to just 41.
Wow, 7,300 different varieties. Rowan, that's a lot of varieties.
Yeah, the USDA did that count in 1904, and that's how many they found that have been for sale somewhere in the country over the past century. And then, you know, we got down to just a few, but finally, we're starting to turn things around now.
I have a smell in the studio that, of course, doesn't translate across the radio very well. But I have a little apple smell in the studio right now because our Joyce Lieberman, our chief engineer, came in with a Macintosh for the Jewish New Year. Thank you so much, Joyce. It smells lovely. Let's go back to the telephone. We have Judy from Haddon Township, New Jersey.
Hi. Yeah, my favorite apple, and it's the most exquisite one, I think, is winesap, sometimes called stamen winesap.
Hmm.
It is crisp. It is juicy. It's tangy. When you take a bite, it's so juicy that you'll get juice running down your hand. It is perfect. The only trouble is it's got a short growing season, I guess, so that by the time we get into the supermarket, sometimes they're not as crisp, but if you get them from a farmer's market, they're, to me, it's the most exquisite, perfect apple.
And what's the name of it again, Judy?
It's it used to be called winesap. Now, if you see a sign for it, it's usually stamen winesap.
Hmm.
My mother's cousins had an orchard in Maryland, and they grew them, but I get them.
It sounds like that phone is breaking up. But Rowan, you've heard of that apple?
A very famous apple. It's actually two different apples. The winesap, super famous apple that originated in New Jersey long ago, probably the early 1700s, and became the most important apple throughout the Southeast because it did well on clay soils and was a really good keeper. Then stamen is actually a seedling from a winesap. So it was a seed off of a winesap tree that was born in Kansas in 1866 and was very similar to the original winesap, but was considered an improvement on it. It was sweeter and juicier and a little bit bigger. So then stamen, most people switched over to stamen, and stamen really is one of the most amazing and complex flavors you'll get in an apple. It's sometimes described as vinous, which I think is kind of means it's a little bit cidery in flavor and well worth looking for. But yeah, short shelf life for stamen, so farmer's market, so pick your own is probably your best bet.
I can't stop sniffing the stem of this Macintosh. It smells wonderful. We got a tweet from Penny who asked, what are some good apple varieties that are good for people with sensitive teeth? Any suggestions there, Rowan?
Yeah, interesting question. Well, I would Macintosh. Since you've got it right there, you might want to bite into it. Macintosh is sometimes ugly because they tend to be pretty tender.
See? It's pretty good.
Delicious flavor, but kind of tender flesh that can be too soft for certain circumstances. But there are, back in the day, like now we kind of really value crisp apples, but back in the day, people also really like tender apples, and that's something we've kind of gotten away from.
Yeah, you have to sort of prepare yourself. It's like, okay, it's not going to be exactly what I'm looking for, but don't expect that and expect what it is.
Totally. It's all about the expectations.
Yeah. Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Aaron from Lambertville in New Jersey. Aaron, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you. My favorite variety is actually a Macoun apple. I pick my own in Terhune's Orchard in Lawrenceville, but they're also available at the Trenton Farmer's Market on a regular basis. And it's really a beautiful blend where the green part of the apple is kind of tart and the red part's really sweet. And it's just a very, very delicious and crisp apple.
Mm. So have you heard of the Macoun, Rowan?
That's just about my favorite apple. I actually have one in my front yard. I'm staring at it right now. and it's at its peak right now, here in Vermont anyway. I can't sometimes call the Macoun the Honeycrisp of 1920 because it's got that same kind of incredible crispness to it. And it also, yeah, it almost has like a Sprite flavor, like a Lyman kind of thing where it's zingy with these sweet and tart flavors mixed together. Great apple.
Wow. So a lot of different varieties to choose from, and we want to hear about your where do you go to get your apples? We have another call from Gloria in Mount Laurel. Gloria, you're on Radio Times.
I have to put in a vote for York Imperial.
Tell me about the York Imperial.
They're fascinating to me because they're always crooked. If you sit at a York on the counter, it's always crooked. If it's not crooked, it's not a York. And there's a farm market in, I think it's on Route 47 down off the turnpike that has a wonderful selection of apples. And I used to have a pick-your-own orchard some years ago. Mm. My neighbor helped me, and we did have to grow some Red Delicious. And I would say, we have to go and taste the Red Delicious and see if they're ready. And she would say, do we have to?
Thank you for calling, Gloria. And Rowan, have you heard of these crooked York Imperial apples?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned the York, Gloria, because, well, actually, if anyone looks at my book, you'll see that on the title page, I have a full-sized photo of a York because it is such a funny-looking apple. They're always crooked. They all fall over if you try to stand them up. It's also one of the most important apples Pennsylvania ever produced. Can you guess where it came from?
Maybe York?
You got it. It's a super good keeper. The farmer who first noticed it saw that there's this seedling tree by the roadside that in the early spring, when snow was melting, he noticed school kids like digging through the snow and pulling these bright red apples out from under the snow and eating them. And he thought, wow, whatever that tree is, those apples will really keep. So the tree went on to fame from there.
Hmm. We received a comment from Miriam. She says she wants to eat 365 apples a year, but she wants to know how she can keep them fresh.
The refrigerator is the best bet. It actually works quite well, and apples will go a lot longer than you think that they will in there. Some of these older varieties were also, like their whole claim to fame was that they could last for months in your root cellar. So if you get the russets or Yorks, apples like that, they don't even need the fridge, and they'll go for many months.
Let's go to the telephone again, and Phil from Unionville, Pennsylvania. Phil, you're on Radio Times.
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good, and looking at this Macintosh, so if you want to talk, I'm going to have a bite.
I indulge, please. I'm a big fan of what I believe to be a newer variety, the Cameo apple, which I think is just magnificently delicious. And they grow Cameos at one of the oldest orchards in Pennsylvania, I believe, Bernard's Orchards, over in Unionville here in Chester County. That's an old Quaker family. Lou Bernard runs it, and I think they've been on that land for over 200 years growing apples.
Are you familiar with... Sorry, I have a mouthful of apple.
That's quite all right.
Yeah,
enjoy.
You take over the show, Rowan.
Very new very new apple, the Cameo. Just released a few years ago, and kind of in the modern apple style, which is very sweet and very crisp. And yeah, the people I know who've encountered Cameos have been big fans. Mm.
Let's go back to the telephone. I want to get in as many calls as we can. We'll go to Deborah in the Philly suburbs. Deborah, welcome to Radio Times.
Yes, thank you. My favorite apple is the Cox's Orange Pippin, and it is so hard to find here. Are you familiar with it?
Rowan?
Yes. Well, Cox's Orange Pippin is the most famous English apple, of all time. It originated in 1825 in the backyard of a brewer, and when people tasted it, they thought this is so obviously the best apple we've ever had, and it's now famous in England, and you can find it all over the place. It has a very different flavor from American apples. It's much more citrusy, tart, and with all kinds of sort of blood orange and grapefruit flavors in there. It's amazing, but I agree, it's hard to find in the U.S., although if you go to a good heirloom orchard, a good pick-your-own, there's a pretty decent chance that you can find a Cox's orange pippin.
And quickly here, before we have to wrap up, if you want to grow a tree, where do you find seeds for these unusual kinds of apples?
Well, that's the key. The seed doesn't work, because a seed will produce a new variety you've never seen before. The apples don't come true to the seed, so you have to get a little seed, a tree, a little tree that has been grafted from the original tree.
Mm.
So any nursery will have a lot of different varieties, and there are actual nurseries that specialize in heirloom apples that will have maybe 400 or 500 varieties.
All right.
And you can mail order.
Great. Rowan Jacobson is author of the book Apples of Uncommon Character. Thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure. It was fun.
If you'd like to learn more about this program, go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You'll find links to our Twitter handle, our Facebook feed is there, and there's information on the podcast, where to find us on satellite radio archives, email contact information, and more. The engineer today is Kevin Griffin. The producers of Radio Times are Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. And I have an apple. I'm going to eat it right now. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moskowing.